The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Now, I want to talk about the 300,000 people in Ireland who live with a rare genetic condition. So many live with conditions that Vicky McGrath, who's the CEO of the Rare Diseases Ireland, is with me to talk about a survey that they have carried out. But first, I want to introduce Louise O'Keefe, because Louise knows all about what it's like to live with a rare condition, or rather care for somebody with a rare condition. Her daughter, Ella, is just such an individual. Louise, you're very welcome to the show, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us. Tell us about Ella.
So Ella is 8. She's 8 years old. She has a condition called neurofibromatosis microdeletion syndrome. And she was diagnosed with that when she was 3. That's a neurological condition that causes tumours to grow throughout the nervous system. So she needs regular monitoring with MRIs and such.
Tell me a little bit about the diagnosis then, Louise, and I suppose the journey to the diagnosis, to get a diagnosis.
So when Ella was born, from birth, Ella had a lot of problems. You know, she had breathing problems, and she wasn't thriving. She never met any milestones. She didn't sleep. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on. She was sick a lot as well. After, we were wondering, why is she presenting with all these problems? So her paediatrician sent blood tests away to check for any syndromes or any genetic reason, you know. And her test came back then that she was had a chromosome deletion, which then led her to have this neurofibromatosis microdeletion syndrome.
The diagnosis then is that, and you'll have to excuse my naivety, is that the end of the journey? Is it just then a case of dealing with it, or then do you run into difficulties in terms of accessing, you know, services?
Yeah, well, obviously, like, Ella also has autism, intellectual disability. She has, a very high care needs. So Ella has to access, you know, a lot of different therapies and services, etc. She needs a lot of support. So I suppose when we got the diagnosis, it was a whole other world to go into, like, you know, because you're talking about tumours, cancer, there's a lot of other things that come along with it too, you know.
I know lots of people in this situation who would make this assumption. Did you kind of assume that, you know, once you had a diagnosis, the services would all be there, you know what I mean? Because they're needed and they're necessary. Well, and then you kind of come to this realization only afterwards, oh my God, they're not.
Yeah, well, you see, like, to be honest, when you don't know, like, I didn't know anything about any of this, you know, like, I just knew I had a child here, with something wrong. So obviously when she was diagnosed, I expected, like, some sort of support to be there, but no. I was just told on the phone, this came back in her results. It's probably nothing to worry about, you know, and off you go. Like, that's exactly how it was for me. It wasn't until a few months later when I seen a consultant and they sat me down and said, no, actually, this is very, very serious. Your daughter has a condition that causes tumours to grow, high risk of cancer, and just explained it all to me like that. She said, we'll put you on the list to see a genetics consultant. But the waiting list is very long, you know. So my daughter's the type of neurofibromatosis that my daughter has is very rare. There was absolutely no literature published at the time. I did get in touch with the NF Association of Ireland, but they didn't have any information on the type of NF that my daughter has. You know, since then they have added it to their website and their literature, which is great. But at the time, I had nothing. I didn't even have a piece of paper, a leaflet, to explain what this meant. And I had to just wait then for the genetics appointment to come through. So you can imagine how that was.
I can't, I suppose. You know, I'm lucky enough that I can't. How long were you waiting for that appointment?
I think it was around 18 months.
Okay.
So obviously in the meantime, like, you know, I was very worried, scared. I was Google. I spend most of my time on Google. trying to find people as well with this condition to link in with other parents and stuff. Yeah, I spent a lot of time on Google. So by the time my genetics appointment came around, I kind of knew, you know, I knew what this meant. I knew a lot about the condition. So I wasn't really told anything new, I suppose.
And listen, I want to talk to Vicky McGrath from Rare Diseases Ireland in just a minute about that experience, how common or uncommon it is. But before I let you go, Louise, how's Ella today?
Oh, she's grand, yeah. She's doing well, thank God.
Good. Glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear
it. Keeps me on my toes anyway.
Yeah, well, they all do that.
Yeah.
Listen, Louise, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Like I say, Vicky McGrath, who's the CEO of Rare Diseases Ireland, is with us. Vicky, I mean, delays like that, like experienced by Louise and Ella, and then I suppose confusion and having to go off and fill in the blanks yourself, and then realizing the paucity of services post diagnosis. I'd hazard a guess you're going to tell me that's not entirely uncommon.
It's far too common is the problem, really. It's a very typical story. It's a very common story. You know, you spend days and weeks and months trying to find out what the diagnosis is, and then when you eventually get something and you hope it's the correct thing that you're getting, you then discover actually the healthcare provider across the table knows about as much as I do at this stage, and we all head for Google and that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's a huge dearth of information. When you're talking about rare conditions, you know, 1 in 2,000 people might have this condition, and many conditions are ultra rare. You know, it could be 1 in 1,000,000 people has the condition, and it's just not, I guess, possible for the medics to know everything about every single condition.
No.
So it's a learning process for absolutely everybody. So it's trying to make sure that these connections are made and the diagnosis comes as early as possible, and the people can upskill themselves as quickly as possible. And I think Louise's story about you know, going out and trying to find other families, that's absolutely critical, because it's, you know, it's the lived experience. It's the peer-to-peer kind of support. And that's what really, really gets a lot of people over this hump of isolation and, you know, lack of certainty as to what might happen and stuff. It's finding other people with similar conditions and understanding the processes they went through. And then obviously, as you say, you know, the services, what's available. I think we all know that the HSE isn't necessarily the most streamlined organisation in the world. And so it's up to mums and dads and parents and family members and even people living with the conditions themselves to try and manage all of this and see what's available and try and access and try and find the right sources of information and stuff like that. So, it's a long path. It's just not... I think, you know, for those of us that aren't affected by rare conditions, you know, personally in our family lives and stuff, we're just, you know, count your lucky stars.
The experience, say that 1 in 1,000,000 condition you talk about, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unrealistic to expect the physician in the hospital to be an expert in that and everything else. At the same time, if it's only 1 in 1,000,000, the HSE is not going to hire a whole suite of experts just, you know, for 5 patients in the country. So, I mean, how then do you deal with that? Like, what is the solution to make life better for those patients, people who've been diagnosed, and easier for their families?
Well, I guess one of the big things that's happened over the last number of years is Europe. Europe has come on board with rare diseases and has looked at them, kind of said, you know what, actually, this is one of the areas where Europe should be excelling in terms of the EU and our ability to network people. And, you know, when we're talking about the population of all of Europe versus the population of Ireland, we can now start finding more of those patients and connecting and identifying
the economies of scale argument. I mean, there might be 5 patients in Ireland, but there'd be 500, 600 across the EU.
Exactly. Exactly. And if I'm the specialist with a particular expertise or interest in this particular condition, I can now study maybe all 500 of them and understand and be in a better position to know what to explain to parents and or families and, you know, what lies ahead and stuff like that. So, you know, it's still the early days. We have in Europe what's known as European reference networks, where they've established, centres of excellence for different conditions. and Ireland has actually just joined a number of these. It's still, I guess it's still very early days for the HSE as to how we're going to plug all the patients into these centres of expertise. But what we would hope is that, you know, our researchers have found that just over 30% of those that responded said there was no expertise. There's nobody in the country that has any idea about my rare condition. And so what we're hoping is that as these ERNs, as they become functionalised within the HSE and people get onto pathways to allow them to access expertise across Europe, that we will actually see that if we rerun this survey maybe in about 5 years' time, that we will see that that number has now dropped to 15% or something like that. You know, that actually we're much better networked and able to understand and able to point people towards the precise resources that they need.
All right,
to help with the diagnosis and the treatment and things.
And that's the roadmap.
It's a long, hard journey. And,
yeah,
you know, Louise's example, 18 months, you know, I've been given a name and now I have to wait 18 months for a genetics consultant to actually see me, to give me some explanation as to what this actually means, you know. And for Louise and for her family, you know, a young mother with a, you know, with a daughter, am I going to have more children? What's going to happen? All of these questions just pepper you. And, you know, you're just trying to, I guess, keep the show on the road as well at this stage. And so, you know, what I guess one of the findings in terms of our research that we've just published is around, you know, genetics is providing answers to people. It's allowing people to be diagnosed. There's, you know, precision around it. But the wait, the delay in genetic services are just appalling. And we need to do something about it, because obviously you can't treat people unless you know what they have. We often have patients that are being treated for one condition and subsequently discover, actually, that's not what I have. And for most, you know, the treatment might not be too adverse, but for some, it's not. You know, for some, there may be harm done. And obviously, no doctor wants to end up in that scenario. So, you know, we're trying to, I guess, if we can get a diagnosis quicker, so 30% waiting 5 years, we need to bring those figures way down.